I'm Mark Sullinger, producer and one of the hosts of The Moth Podcast. For nearly two decades, The Moth has brought live storytelling to stages around the world and to millions of listeners. These are real people telling true stories from their lives. Stories about a lost family recipe, about working to free a wrongfully convicted man, about realizing you need to leave your May-December romance. Stories that will move you, surprise you, make you laugh. Stories you can't forget. Join us. Follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
It is 1:06, and you are smack dab in the middle of the Shaletta Show on News Talk 830 WCCO Radio, your good neighbor station. We've got Lindsey Brown at the WCCO Radio studio in downtown Minneapolis, and I, look at here now, I am broadcasting my show live from the bedroom of my parents' house where I grew up as a little girl. And, you know, it just hit me, y'all. I used to dream about being a DJ. Like, I would put my hands over my ears because back then headphones cost $30. You couldn't even play with it. Okay, you can play with $30. And so you had to, if you were going to pretend to be a DJ, you had to really pretend. So I would put my hand over my ears and sit in this room and pretend like I was announcing songs and giving the time and the temperature. And look at me today. Look how far God has brought me. Thank you, Jesus, for answering my prayers, for blessing the work of my hands and making my efforts successful. I'm a whole full-fledged radio announcer, and I have the SAG-AFTRA membership to prove it. What you say now? I'm also a parent of four children. Three of them have special needs. And when it was just me, Sean, and Andrew, my normal developing teenager, who's now a sophomore at St. Cloud State University, we would go to the fair and have a great time. We didn't have any problem with noise. We were probably the noisiest ones there. We didn't have any problem with lights or sound or long lines of people. There was no such thing as sensory overload for us. We were overloading people with our own senses because we were screaming on all the rides and running and making all the noise and eating up all of everything on a stick. But then I had Brandon and then Cameron and then Daniel, and they were all diagnosed with autism. And I thought, I'm never going to be able to go back to the state fair. I'm going to have to sneak away and go by myself. I tried it the first year and, you know, just did it all wrong. We went at 1 o'clock when there were so many people there and the kids were crying and they were hot and sweaty and they were pulling on me. And then I was crying all of a sudden, hot and sweaty. And I thought, we are never going back. Never say never. Because our friends at the fair and our friends at Fraser have done an amazing job making sure that neurodiverse Minnesotans can come to the fair. I don't care whether you are 2 or 202. And they have some tips, some tricks, some spaces, and some places where we can go and thrive. And they even have a sensory friendly day. Now, I want to make sure you get all the details. If you are a grandparent who has a grandchild with autism, if you are a therapist or a counselor who sees patients or clients that are on the spectrum or have ADHD or have sensory issues, I need y'all to listen to this next segment so you can pass this information on to the parent or the caregiver of that kid. Blair Hunneke is joining us from the Minnesota State Fair on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Miss Blair, thank you for taking some time out of your Saturday to hang out with me today.
Thank you so much for having me today. I'm excited to be here.
Now, Blair, there are a lot of parents out there who see us at the fair and they think, okay, if Shaletta can take her autistic kids there, I'm taking my kids too. But y'all have given me some tips and tricks so that we know when to go. We know what days are better than others. We know what time to show up. We know when the sensory day is. We know where the Fraser booth is and when they're going to be coming with them therapy animals. So I need you to tell all of the listeners who count on me to pass along information to them, all of the stuff that you've given me so that our family could have fun at the fair and stay for hours without having any real major issues.
Yeah. I think you said it yourself in your intro. Planning ahead and making sure that you're coming on a day where it's a little less busy out here and on a time where it's maybe a little less busy is the first biggest tip that we have for anyone. So historically, we know that Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday are some of our less busy days out here, and then mornings are obviously the best. Hopefully it's a little bit cooler for everybody. Our gates open at 7 a.m., so if you're an early bird and you can get here right away, the grounds are, dare I say it, peaceful at that time. There's not as many people, and you can kind of meander around at your own pace, and then a lot of our buildings start to open up at 9 a.m. So those are, I guess, the biggest first tip we have is just make sure you know when you're coming out here when it's a little bit less busy.
Yeah, that early morning tip that y'all gave me a couple of years ago was a game changer. I just remember walking down the Midway with a wagon with Daniel in it, and he was crying. Brandon and Cameron were pulling on my clothes to the point where my bra was showing. They were crying. Andrew was mad and frustrated because he wanted to stay and hang out with his friends, but I knew once we got separated, we were never going to get back together. It was like the first weekend, it was 1 o'clock. It was just people everywhere. I was like, what am I doing? This is the craziest decision I ever made in my life. This doesn't make any sense, but you know, having those tips to know Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, get there at 7 o'clock. They up anyway. They wake up at 5. I got good parking. And then here's the thing. We go at 7. You think, well, what are they going to do? Nothing is open. They just like to look around.
Yeah.
The Rainbow Play System is right there. You know, they've got a couple of things you can swing and slide on that are unrestricted. Right. And then, you know, there's some green space where they can run around and play. And then for us, a few of the vendors saw us walking by and we got a couple little extra treats early. And so we didn't have to wait on the soul bowl. We got the first bowl because we were just hanging out early. And then, you know, we were able to say, what rides do we want to get on? Well, let's go over here and wait for them. We were the first ones in line at Peachy's Donuts. You know what that line at Peachy's Donuts looks like, girl.
Yes. Yeah, I think, you know, we have some vendors who also open up early in the morning, too, and that information will be on our website. So there's definitely things to do when you come here in the morning. And in terms of planning ahead, we also have a lot of tips and tricks for what exhibits might be best for people who have sensory sensitivities and what you can expect when you get here, tips for how to get here. All of that is on our accessibility guide that's on our website. So you can find that under the Visit tab. And click on Accessibility Guide, and then there's a whole section on there about sensory-friendly visits to the fair and kind of helping you plan for what times to come here, what exhibits you can see, and everything that you can do once you get here as well.
Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break, but when we come back, I want to talk to you about the sensory-friendly day and the therapy animals that are going to be at the Fraser House. More with my friend Blair from the fair when we come back.
I'm Sarah Austin Jeunesse, The Moth's executive producer and longtime host of The Moth Podcast. Every week, we share true stories told live and without notes by real people from all walks of life. Stories about disastrous haircuts, May-December romances, photographing Pluto, fighting for justice, and so much more. Some stories make you laugh, some make you think, and many stay with you long after they're told. Discover the power of story. Follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
It is 1:18. You are listening to News Talk 830 WCCO Radio, your good neighbor station. It's the Shaletta Show. My name is Shaletta Brundage, and I'm the host of the show, talking to my girlfriend Blair from the fair. Blair, we got to put that on a t-shirt.
It's a good little nickname. I like it.
It's a good little nickname, girl. We got to like put your face on there, girl. I'm over here giving you $1 million marketing ideas. Don't laugh it off, girl. Like get a little logo, Blair from the fair, put your face in there. You smiling and stuff, girl. That what? Girl, we're going to put that on the stick.
I'll take it up with our logos department and see what we can do.
No. See, we proceed until apprehended, Blair. That's how I do it at WCCO. We just get it done, and then the bosses come back and say, no, it's too late. But by then, everybody's walking around the fair with the Blair from the fair t-shirt, right?
I like the way you say it. Yes.
Proceed until apprehended. And I'm glad you apprehended me, girl, and told me how to proceed at the fair, because I was going all wrong with my autistic kids. And the fair has really stepped up their game in the past couple of years. I'm so proud of y'all, because now you have sensory friendly days. Talk to us about that, Blair. This is something that parents who have kids with autism have been like dreaming about.
Yeah, if your kids would like to come to the Kidway or the Midway, and maybe normally it's just a little too overwhelming, the sounds are too loud, the lights are too bright, there's just a little bit too much going on, we have brought a sensory-friendly morning to our Kidway from 9 to 11, and then our Midway from 10 to noon on Monday, August 25th. So coming on the Monday of the fair when it's a little less busy, and then during those times at the Kidway and the Midway, there's sounds that are turned down, lights that are less bright, and it's just a little bit more chill for people who may be sensitive to that.
Now, you guys have recently started doing that. What's been some of the feedback that you've received from parents so that people who are thinking about going can know what to expect?
Yeah, I think it's been great feedback. You know, like I said, the lights are not as bright. The sounds are a little bit quieter. And we talk about being the Great Minnesota Get-Together here. And this is one of the ways that we really can make that be true. Because if we're not including everyone, we feel like we can't call ourselves that. So this is just another way to make the fair a little bit more accessible for everybody. And we've heard great feedback from parents who've been able to bring their kids.
That is so awesome. And, you know, speaking of awesome sauce, we've got to send a shout out to our friends at Frazier. They have the Frazier House at the fair. Now, I know you're not from Frazier, but you work closely with them putting this list together and going over to the house and talk to parents who've never been to the Frazier House about what's available there for families who have neurodiverse kids.
Yeah, Frazier has been an incredible partner to us here at the fair, making sure that we're kind of creating some more sensory-friendly spaces, and they have the Frazier Sensory Building here on the fair. It's located near Gate 5, and the front half of that building is kind of a space where you can go in and you can talk to people from Frazier, learn about their services. Maybe if you need to purchase some headphones to kind of noise cancel for your kids or some fidgets to kind of keep them occupied, you can get that sort of thing there. And then in the back half of that building, it's a sensory-friendly space. So it's dimmer lights, it's calm music. There's some different fidgets and some toys to just kind of help you regulate your emotions and kind of take a little bit of a moment to take a break and chill out before you go back out and take on the fair. So Frazier has been an incredible resource to have here, and we're lucky to have them back again.
And they got some therapy dogs coming. Who doesn't love a therapy dog? So if the kids are overwhelmed and overloaded, adults too, right? They can come to the Frazier House when, so that they can hang out with these beautiful therapy animals that'll be available for folks to come and calm down and hang out with.
Yeah, North Star Therapy Animals will be at the Frazier Sensory Building on both Mondays of the fair. So that's Monday, August 25th, and then Monday, September 1st on Labor Day. And they'll be here with their therapy animals from 11 a.m. in the morning until 5 p.m. in the afternoon. And they'll be kind of on the front patio area of the Frazier Sensory Building. And guests can come up and say hi to a therapy dog and kind of use that to also regulate their senses and help them tackle the rest of the fair.
I love that. Now, I'm getting a couple of notes from parents. I need them to know where they can find these resources. They're like, girl, I'm driving.
Yes. Yeah, all of our resources for Sensory Friendly Days and any other accessibility services you may need. So we have ASL interpreters. We have some audio descriptions for people who maybe are blind or have low vision. You know, wheelchair renting, any sort of thing accessibility-wise that you need is on our accessibility guide on our website. You'll see the visit tab, and then you can click on accessibility guide, and all of the information is there.
Okay, now, what's the cost to get into the fair this year? Have prices gone up? Is it the same as last year? I was just talking to Christy from MITMART, and she was talking about ice cream prices going up. You know, what's it going to cost us to get in the doors this year?
If you purchase your tickets pre-fair, which we suggest to everybody at a discounted rate, they'll be $17. And then at the gates, they will be $20 this year. And as we also have various different discount days, so you can check that all out on our website as well.
Okay. And now the thing that we all want to know, girl, the new fair foods. What you got,
Yes.
girl? What's coming up on the stick? What are folks going to be talking about? Because you took us by storm with the peaches donuts, and then next thing we know, we even fell in love with the pickle pizza. So what is coming that's going to blow us away again at the fair?
We never know what's going to be the fan favorite, but this year we'll have 33 new foods and then eight
What?
new vendors. So between the 33 new foods and the eight vendors, I'm sure we'll have a fan favorite and a popular one will rise to the top.
Okay, girl, you don't have no sneak peek. It's got to be something like when you tasted that peachy donut, you must have known this is it. This is a hit. When you tasted the pickle pizza, you must have known folks are going to lose their mind. Like, what's in your gut? Like, with the new foods and everything that you know is coming. Like, come on, girl, tell us something. What you think is going to pop?
Well, there's a lot of fun sweets this year. We have Grandma Doreen's dessert dog from the West End Creamery, which is kind of a fun one. We have green apple sucker ice cream from Granny's Apples, which is also another great one. So lots of sweets. There is a dill pickle iced tea for all the pickle lovers out there. That's at Loon Lake Iced Tea. So a lot of different stuff for anyone's flavors that they can find across the board.
Okay, girl, back up to the dill pickle iced tea because I can go get my fried pickles because I'm a pickle girl. So I'm going to get my fried pickles. And where is this dill pickle iced tea? Where is that?
It is at Loon Lake Iced Tea.
Okay. All right, girl, I'm there. I am absolutely there with a fist full of money and a bunch of kids who are going to want some. And I'm definitely going to say, I'm going to say, no, this is a grown-up drink. Uh-uh, you can't have this. See, it's green. What did mama tell you? When my drinks are green, you can't share. Remember mama told you that? So if you see me and my kids walking around with your Blair from the Fair shirt on and they ask you about the green drink, just tell them, either tell them it's for grown-ups or just tell them, just ask your mom about it. I can't really talk about it. I just can't thank you enough for hanging out with me, coming on the show, and spending some time with us this afternoon on the Shaletta Show on CCO Radio. The fair is always a good neighbor, always welcome here. And we just can't wait to see you guys. And just, girl, wait, in a few days.
Yes.
Oh, I can't wait. Did I ever tell you my Sweet Martha story?
No.
Okay, I have to tell you my Sweet Martha story before you go. So, I'm a Sweet Martha fan. Like, I got pictures of Sweet Martha up in my house because anybody who makes $4.9 million in 12 days without violating any RICO laws, that's my hero. Like, she is the epitome of an amazing entrepreneur who changed careers and put out a good product and got everybody going cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs over her cookies, right? And so the WCCO radio booth just happens to be right next door to Sweet Martha's, one of the locations that she has at the fair, right? And so I was like, if I ever see her, I want to know the secret to her success. Because, girl, most entrepreneurs, we're out here rebranding and paying people to redo our website and changing the colors and the logos and going to all these networking events and pop-ups and setting up tables at the farmer's market. Girl, I have never seen Sweet Martha at a pop-up. I don't even know if she's got a website. I've never seen a commercial. She ain't got nobody out there waving people over to try to buy her cookies. She ain't passing out no samples. People just loyally line up, right? And wait patiently to get them cookies. I was like, this woman is a marketing genius. I don't know what she's done, but obviously something I don't see because everybody has fallen in love with these cookies. Girl, so she passed by. And because I know what she, because she's very unassuming, you know?
Yeah.
So when she walked by, I instantly knew her because her picture's up in my bathroom. And I was like, that's Sweet Martha. And I was in the middle of, I think, interviewing Jill from Comcast. Girl, I left that interview. I dropped that microphone. I jumped off that WCCO radio stage. And I went to grab her, but I don't want any charges filed. I went to greet her. And she was very stunned because I just grabbed her like, hey, you're Sweet Martha. And I was like, you got to tell me the secret to your success. You made more money in 12 days than most companies make in 12 years. And so what are you doing that's different? How are you promoting? How are you getting the word out? How are you marketing these cookies? Because everybody's walking around here with a bucket of these dang cookies. Yeah, you know what she told me? She said, well, I'm a good person and I put out a good product.
That's the way to do it.
I was like, ma'am, I need some tips. This is not, it's like, when you ask somebody, how do I lose weight? Exercise and eat healthy. No, I don't want that. I want a pill. Give me a pill. And I was just like, she blew me away. And just how sweet she is when you meet her in person, and how unassuming she is and how patient and kind she was. She didn't know me from Adam, and stopped to talk to me and take a picture with me like I was giving her a choice, right? But it changed the way that I do business. Like, I don't have social media anymore. I got off all my social media. I was like, if Sweet Martha says this works, I'm the proof is in the pudding. I'm doing what Sweet Martha's doing. I want my $4.9 million in 12 days. And so whatever she's doing, I'm doing too. And so, you know, you walk around the fair to have fun. You walk around to eat new food and ride on the rides and to bring your kids. But if you really take a look beyond what you see, you can be inspired by some of the business owners who come to the fair each and every year, by some of the stories, some of the people operating the rides. Everybody has an amazing story to tell. So I would challenge people when they go this year for the 5011th time of their life to look and see something different and unique that they've never seen before. I literally changed up my whole business model because I had a 60-second conversation with Sweet Martha. So I ain't got no cookies. Next time I'm going to ask her for the cookie recipe. I ain't got no cookies, but I got me a marketing recipe, and I'm going to pray that it works, girl.
Yes. We definitely couldn't do it out here without all of our incredible vendors. That's for sure.
Yes, indeed. All right, Blair from the fair. We will see you in a few days, girl. Thanks for hanging out on the Shaletta Show.
Thank you for having me.
All right. It is 1:30 on the dot. I'm going to bring you some weather when we come back.
I'm Sarah Austin Jeunesse, The Moth's executive producer and longtime host of The Moth Podcast. Every week, we share true stories told live and without notes by real people from all walks of life. Stories about disastrous haircuts, May-December romances, photographing Pluto, fighting for justice, and so much more. Some stories make you laugh, some make you think, and many stay with you long after they're told. Discover the power of story. Follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Let me tell you when my kids get hot at me. You know when they get hot at me? When I'm late, which is always every day and yes. Listen, I am a business owner. I have this job at WCCO Radio. I work in that almanac. I'm writing these columns. I am a mother. I'm a community activist and servant. I've got laundry and dishes. I've got emails to check and voicemails to return. I got a lot going on. And so I'm always pushing time. If a meeting starts at 2:00 and it is like 1:57, I'm like, you know what? I can answer this call. I can maybe like put up a couple of towels. Maybe I can vacuum real quick and get that thing off my to-do list. And I'm rushing and I'm trying to get it done. And it always makes me late or gets me in trouble. I never have pad ever. If I show up to lunch, I'm coming hot on two wheels. Right. I had lunch with Kelly, one of my copywriters at ShalettaMakesMeLaugh.com, and we were meeting at Brasa at 2:00, and it was 12:30, and I was like, you know what? I know the traffic in downtown Minneapolis is bad, but I think I got time to run to the bank. Yeah, because I got to get some cash before I go on vacation, because I always travel with cash just in case all hell breaks loose and everything goes down and I got to get a hotel room. I got to have enough money to take care of my kids for at least a day or two in case we get stuck somewhere. You never know. You get on a plane, they have an emergency, right? So I went to Bremer Bank, got some cash out. Sure enough, wind up being 10 minutes late because there was an accident over on Hennepin, and then we had to be rerouted, and the people rerouting crashed, and so that reroute turned into another reroute, and by the time I got to lunch, it was 2:11. And she was so nice and patient with me, but that's because she loves me. My kids, they don't love me. I don't even think they like me, because when I'm late, they let me have it. They are sticklers on time. Big time on time management, just like their father. So when I read this column that Emily Labor Warren wrote for the New York Times, I thought, oh my God, I got to get girlfriend on my show. It blew my mind. Research and personality and time all go together. She's joining us courtesy of the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Now, Emily, girl, wait a minute. You know, I had to let my kids read this story. I had to give it to my ex-husband. I was like, it's not my fault. The reason I'm late is because of my personality. Emily said it. It's in the New York Times. It's got to be true. Girl, you have got to tell these people because everybody is talking about it. It's viral. Like, I was telling some girlfriends about it. They are already talking about it. Everybody who's late is using your column as an excuse for showing up late, girl. I don't know.
Yeah, I have a huge smile on my face. I love how you went into this whole thing. And I'll add that ever since I started working on this piece, one of my kids, whenever I'm late, will be like, oh, Mom, you're just being polychronic, right? It's a new joke in our family. Oh, I'm just polychronic. I'm not late.
Oh, my God. I'm not late. I'm polychronic. I love it, girl. I'm going to put it on a shirt. Okay, so you have got to tell people about this New York Times column that you wrote that's got everybody buzzing.
Well, I'm delighted to be here. So, yeah, so I interviewed a really interesting academic at the University of Texas, Austin, named Donna Ballard, a couple years ago, and she blew my mind. Because she told me that time is not the clock. Like, the two things are not the same. And it took me a really long time to wrap my mind around that. But I thought, let me put a pin in that because that is really interesting. So, you know, like everyone else in this, you know, the culture that we live in, right, I feel like when it's 9 o'clock, it's 9 o'clock. If something starts at 10 o'clock, it starts at 10 o'clock. And my entire life is like one long ruler that I have divided into the hours and I'm fitting in things. And what Dr. Donna Ballard explained to me is like, that's actually not a thing. Like, that's not real. And if you think about it, we didn't even have clocks a few hundred years ago, right? Like back in the olden days, like in 1100, 1500, people weren't like, see you at 9 o'clock. They'd be like, I'll see you when the sun reaches the, you know what I mean? Like people would just show up in the morning or in the afternoon, right? Like we didn't have the ability to be so precise about time. And it turns out that there was a cultural anthropologist back in the 50s who traveled the world, and he observed that there are two different ways of experiencing time. And I love how you describe yourself and how you're always trying to fit more things in. And you're like, oh, I know I have to be here, but maybe I could just like get the dishes, you know, into the dishwasher before I go or whatever it is, right? Because you are multitasking, right? You're doing so many things in your life. And you're someone who is, from what you describe, like open to this idea that like things flow, like your life is a flow, right? You're fitting in all these different things. So apparently it's according to this cultural anthropologist, Edward Hall, he noticed that there were whole cultures, mostly like Latin America and Africa and the Middle East, where people didn't follow clock time. They didn't do one thing at a time, which is the way we tend to do here in the US or in Europe. And they had more of a sense that the event was the time, like the time was the experience or the person you were with. And this is one thing that I really wish got into the article that didn't, which is people are so hung up here in the US and probably in Europe as well on this idea of how rude it is to be even a minute late to something, right? It's just so rude. It's a lack of respect for other people's time, et cetera, right? We've heard that a million times. But in cultures that are polychronic, what is rude is saying to someone, oh, hey, I know we're having a conversation or we're in the middle of lunch, but I got to run because I have this other thing to do. I have this other person that I need to see or this other meeting I need to go to. And that is considered rude. And so it is cultural, right? And so it's not an absolute. So there, in a place that values time in a different way, people understand if you show up 15 minutes too late to the meeting because they figure that you were busy with something else that was important, right? That you couldn't just cut it off, like, you know, with a saw and just say, it's over now because the clock has moved, right? So there's a lot more flexibility. People don't freak out if you show up a few minutes late, and if you think about it, and I'm sorry, I'm going on and on, but I'm very passionate.
No, this is such a great column. I just tell anybody, you gotta go to the New York Times Emily Labor Warren. If you just Google her name, it'll come up. She's listed on the New York Times website. It's the first story that pops up, the last thing that she wrote. And it's all about time and how we view it differently. The title says, "Always Late, Blame Your Time Personality." So, what is a time personality, Emily?
So basically, it's some people are more comfortable. So this is a cultural thing, but it's also there's a lot of individual variation. So even, in the US, there are people who are much more comfortable sort of flowing between activities. They don't like set out and do, I'm going to do this one thing until it's done, and I don't want to be interrupted, and then I'm going to move on to the next thing. Okay, that's one kind of relationship to time and to your task. And that's called monochronic. But there are other people who are much more comfortable dipping in and out of things. They might even be more creative and more productive if they're not forced to just do one thing till it's done and then do the next thing, right? They might do a little bit of something. There's a very cool study that showed that people who were naturally polychronic, like naturally like to kind of multitask, were more creative and more effective if they approached a problem by looking at it like for a short time and moving through different problems and then returning to it and then coming back to it a third time, they solve problems better. But if you are a person who is naturally monochronic, you like to do things one at a time, then those people did better if they just spent, a block of time on a problem and then moved on. So it's not a trait, it's a preference. So you can adjust it, right? It's not like immovable or mutable in your personality. But there are, it is a preference. Some people prefer, and those people tend to be more focused on the clock to do things, sequentially. And other
And you
people
know,
prefer or need.
oh, go ahead, finish your thought. I'm sorry.
Why did you say prefer or need to do things? So you would, the way you set this up was so perfect. You're explaining your life is so full. You have so many competing demands, work and personal and home and all of these things. And so it just doesn't make sense for someone who lives, in this way to have to be, I'm going to finish this and then I'm going to finish that, right? It's not possible. And actually, Edward Hall, the original cultural anthropologist who came up with this thing, he noticed that women and the household tends to be polychronic no matter what, because you can't outrun a household effectively, right?
We have to be, and that's why we be yelling at our husbands, like, you can't do more than one thing. You can't go and then come back and clean the garage. This explains so much. And one of the things that that I thought about when you were talking about, how if a person is late, it's a sign of disrespect or they don't value someone's time. And I've always heard that, but I feel equally offended if I'm with somebody and something you just said just, touched me, because I don't like it when people say, "Well, I gotta run." Was our conversation not good enough? Well, I gotta go, I got another meeting. But were you not having fun? Did I do something? I thought we were having a good time. Why are you? I feel dismissed. Like, even if if I'm having a meeting with someone and we're scheduled for coffee, even if it's an hour long meeting, I always schedule it for 1 hour and 30 minutes because I never want them to feel rushed, and I don't want to feel like I'm rushing them. I do a lot of hosting of events here in town, and whenever people hire me to be the MC, and they stack the program, right? Because they want everybody to talk, they want to give everybody an opportunity. I look at them and say, "We're gonna be here all night because we're not finna ask these people to get dressed up, buy tickets, fly in they mama to come get an award, and then they get on stage and not say nothing. That's not gonna happen on my watch. They gonna get to talk. They gonna get to take time to take. Well, we're giving everybody 60 seconds to come on stage, take pictures, and walk off. No, ma'am. No, ma'am, I'm not going. Well, we have to keep time. Well, you better cut some people out the program. That lady with the baton that's flaming, she don't get the baton. Sounds of Blackness, they don't get to sing but one song. None Above, they get to play the closing music or maybe the after party, because I'm not going to make these people feel like we're rushing them when this is a very important moment for them. This may be the first and only award that they ever get. And so I'm going to take a quick commercial break because, Emily, I want you to tell me, because there's some stuff you left out of the column, girl. I felt like there was so much more you could have done, but I want you to tell me if they have a solution for how polychronic and monochronic people could get along because, girl, I'm thinking that might be the reason that I'm divorced. More with Emily when we come back. I was calling my mama, like, I can't get along with my husband. He's mad at me because I'm always late. I'm mad at him because he always, when it's time to be there or early, and, you know, we're rushing to leave and I want to stick around and talk. This happened every Sunday at church. Like, our whole marriage, like, when church was over, it was over. He was ready to go to the car, and I'm standing there talking and kissing babies and licking old people on the side of the face and making play dates and, you know, dinner reservations with friends. And, you know, just really, I remember one day I just sat down and he was like, "What are you doing? Church is over." Like, but it's church is over. We fellowship and we have fun. And then I would always get to church late. And that would really make him mad because then we miss our seat. He'd be like, "Church starts at 9 o'clock every Sunday. How is it that every Sunday we are here at 9:12? And I mean, it just went on. And I'm calling mama. Mama's like, "Girl, I don't know what to tell you. You just better be on time." But now I understand. Emily Labor Warren's story in the New York Times hit the nail on the head. Title, "Always Late, Blame Your Time Personality. Some people are punctual, others flexible." The reason experts say is that we relate to the clock in different ways. Girl, you gonna make me ask my husband and he won't go ahead and get remarried again, girl. You just the girl. Look, Emily. Emily, you gonna be the flower girl. If we get back together, you are gonna be the flower girl.
You are definitely polychronic. I mean, you are really like this. Everything you're describing about yourself, right, is completely that. So, and it sounds like your husband is not.
Yeah, the ex-husband, he was very on time, always left when it was time to go. He ain't shutting down nothing, girl. I'm leaving when the DJ leave. Like, the lights are coming on and the DJ's packing up music. I'm like, "But one more song. Y'all, where y'all going?" It was like, "We all hired the DJ till 2. It's time to go." "Oh, man, we were having fun. Come on, y'all. One more," you know. And he's like, "Get out of here. Just get in the car." And then I'm mad at him. He's mad at me. When you were doing your research for this story, because you talked with some amazing professionals, how could we, in the words of Rodney King, all just get along?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the idea here is that, you know, so many of us, because we live in a monochronic culture, you know, we're pretty much inculcated with this idea that lateness is rude. It's just rude by its very nature, and that late people are essentially, you know,
we're
bad
people, girl. Oh, man, we're
right?
Bad.
Yes. Selfish and bad, right? But listen to how you're describing the reasons for why you're late. It's not because you're selfish, right? It's because you are connecting and attuning to all of these other people and their needs and their experiences, right? And it takes time. So the idea behind, you know, sort of publicizing this, and actually the first person who named polychronism and monochronism, the cultural anthropologist, he once had this experience with a married couple where he intervened because they were it's a very common, the situation you describe with your ex is very common. And he intervened. It's not always the male who's on time. It could go either way, right? And he intervened with this couple and he talked to them and he explained to them that the person who's driving you crazy is not actually rude or selfish, right? They just experience time in a different way. They have different ways of prioritizing time. And the idea, the hope is that if we at least understand, there's like, take the hostility and negativity and all the assumptions that we put on the other person who's different in their time management, that maybe we can all get along a little better. I mean, that's the hope. The idea. I have to just add. Can I add one more thing, really quick?
Yeah.
Because I don't. Well, because one of the women that I interviewed, she's Caribbean American. She didn't make it into the story, but I love what she said because she, you know, she's very polychronic. Her entire social circle is polychronic. So with her friends, everything is fine. People show up when they show up. No one is ever late. She was saying, "Oh, white people are always apologizing so much. Oh my God, I'm a minute late. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry." She's like, "It's ridiculous, right?" And she said that, you know, it was really hard though at work. And when she was a student, like, because there were these expectations of being extremely prompt and it was very difficult for her. And she said something to me that kind of blew my mind because I am still inculcated in the sort of Eurocentric ways. She said, you know, if someone is
always half an hour late. And I heard you, Shaletta, saying that like 12 minutes seems like in both situations you were 12 minutes late. This woman said to me, if someone is always half an hour late, at a certain point, you have to just accept they're on time. They're on their time. And I thought that was really profound.
Mm. Now, one of the things I did not see you talk about is CP time.
Yes. So CP time, which this, you know, this person I spoke to who didn't make this article, she's like, I run on CP time, right? And there's also Latin time, right? And so there's all of these. And again, stereotypes and negativity can be attached to CP time, right? Or Latin time, colored people time or Latin time. But what we learn when we look at this larger cultural, you know, frame, right, is that these are cultural sort of ways, life ways that have been carried through generations. And it's not like, oh, they can't get it together to be on time. It's like, no, they have a different value system, or we have
and
a different value system.
And that doesn't make it wrong. And that doesn't make
exactly.
it wrong. And I remember when I was doing Almanac, you know, it's a very time show and, you know, they have rehearsals and stuff. And they always be like, Shaletta, where are you? This, I mean, it's every week. And I'm like, chill out. I'm on CP time. And they were like,
yep.
And this is like the whitest white show in Minnesota. And they were like, what is CP time? And so that was an opportunity to tell my white friends about CP time and also to share a part of my culture and heritage with them. And so,
yes.
You know, it's so much cultural awareness in, you know, understanding this, you know, time management system and you know, how we want to, you know, just kind of, you know, blanket our values on other people. And it also helps me to understand people who aren't like me. And, you know, one of the things that I felt was a release from the guilt, a release from the shame, a release from the apologizing, like, oh my God, I, you know, like the lady you interviewed said, you know, if I'm having lunch with Kathy, where she's like, oh my gosh, Shaletta, I'm going to be 2 minutes late. I'm like, girl, for real? I'm still at home. When you get there, order us both a drink. What are you talking about? The party will show up when we get there. Oh my God. Okay, Emily, this has been, I owe you money for a therapy session, girl. This has been fun. Emily Labor Ward, gotta get to the New York Times. Check out her article, Always Late, Blame Your Time Personality. It's 1:57. You don't have anywhere to hide because we have another hour of the Shaletta Show coming up.
I'm Sarah Austin Jeunesse, The Moth's executive producer and longtime host of The Moth Podcast. Every week, we share true stories told live and without notes by real people from all walks of life. Stories about disastrous haircuts, May-December romances, photographing Pluto, fighting for justice, and so much more. Some stories make you laugh, some make you think, and many stay with you long after they're told. Discover the power of story. Follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.